Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 343, titled Mind Jihad, Part 2, Old Complicities That Go Back to the Late 1930s, unquote. This program is being recorded on January 13th of the year 2002. As we continue to explore the events of September 11th, 2001, we're going to further explore an institution that has allegedly been involved in the pan-Islamist or Islamo-fascist, as I call it, terrorist activities of Osama bin Laden and company. I should add that the people involved with this deny any involvement with bin Laden, but that is at variance with the analysis not only of U.S. intelligence, but also with investigators and intelligence operatives of other countries as well, though nothing has as yet been proven. We're going to be taking a look at NADA Management, or Al-Taqwa, as it was formerly called. This is an organization which unites the world of Islamic fundamentalism and what I call the Underground Reich, the underground mafia-like manifestation of the Third Reich. We've spoken about Al-Taqwa, Youssef Nada, and also Ahmed Huber, a German-Swiss-born Islamic fascist who's on the board of the directors of Al-Taqwa, in previous broadcasts, notably For the Record 335, 336, 338, 340, and 341, and in particular we focused on Al-Taqwa in the last broadcast, program 342. We're going to continue our exploration of the allegations concerning Al-Taqwa, and in this broadcast, we are going to look at a manifestation which lends substance to the analysis that I presented initially about September 11th, namely that this is an attack by the Underground Reich on the United States, just like the Second World War. That, just like the Second World War, powerful elements of our industrial establishment, particularly those associated with the petroleum industry and with the Bush family, are working with our enemies, and that in turn the sincerely patriotic elements of our military and intelligence community were betrayed by other elements of same, literally a fifth column, a fascist fifth column that is working with our enemies. Let me set the context of the title of this program. Again, Mind Jihad, Part 2, Old Complicities That Go Back to the Late 1930s. The focal point of our discussion in this broadcast is the book Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States and Islam, authored by Richard Labeviere, L-A-B-E, accent aigu, V-I-E, accent grave, R-E. It was translated from the French by Martin de Mail. It was originally published in 1999 in France, and it was published in the year 2000 in softcover by Algora Publishing of New York, A-L-G-O-R-A. The ISBN number is 1-892941-06-6. Now, in this discussion, we're going to be taking a look at an Islamic fundamentalist organization called the Muslim Brotherhood that is referred to in journalistic shorthand by Labeviere as the Fraternity. In turn, I believe that the pan-Islamic or Islamo-fascist terrorism, which cuts across many elements of the Muslim world, including those that are lethally antagonistic, such as elements of the Sunni and Shiite divisions within Islam, I believe that the primary element of unity between these diverse elements of Islam is not only petroleum money and Saudi finance in particular, that conducted in concert with American petroleum interests and finance, but also with and especially by the Underground Reich. I would add that in For the Record 335, we took a look at allegations by the Swiss that NADA management may have been involved in some of the stock speculation that many investigators believe was connected to the September 11th attacks. In 342, we took a look at the fact that Lugano, Switzerland, the epicenter for NADA management, or Al-Taqwa, is also the epicenter for the industrial and financial empire of Heinrich Thyssen-Bornemisza, one of the primary elements in the Bormann, or the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization that I've spoken about in the past. Now, again, setting the context of the title of this program, Old Complicities That Go Back to the Late 1930s, Listen to the following discussion here of the fraternity or the Muslim Brotherhood to which Yosef Nada belongs. The discussion here is of the redeployment abroad after it was banned from Egypt, and that is the redeployment here, and the fraternity is La Bavière's name for the Muslim Brotherhood. Turning to Dollars for Terror, we read, "This pivotal role in the redeployment of the fraternity, played abroad by Saeed Ramadan, was also emphasized by Rifat Saeed, a deputy of the Egyptian left. Quote, before he settled in Europe, he made long sojourns in Saudi Arabia with King Faisal, then in Pakistan, where he worked with lawyers on the Islamic right. But by the end of the 1950s, he opened a new door by selling the Saudis on the idea of da'wah, i.e. the propagation of Islam, especially in Europe. Thus, he proposed to them initially to open a center in Munich, unquote. Why Munich? Why Germany? I asked Rifat Saeed, again quoting and setting the context of the title. Because there one finds old complicities that go back to the late 1930s, when the Muslim Brothers collaborated with the agents of Nazi Germany. And furthermore, Turkish immigration to Germany had started to become an important phenomenon. By soaking up the savings of these Muslim workers, Yosef Nada, like Saeed Ramadan, took advantage of an extremely favorable context and used it as a springboard for the Muslim Brothers' economic activities. For these various reasons, the Munich Center quickly became very important," unquote, adds the Egyptian deputy. And in exploring the alleged activities of Yosef Nada in this time period, once again from Dollars for Terror, in private, he had declared his solidarity with the Egyptian Muslim Brothers and the Algerian Islamists who, quote, are just now completing their war of decolonization, unquote. But Yosef Nada is even better known to the Egyptian services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the Fraternity of the Muslim Brothers in the 1940s. At that time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. By the way, parenthetically, I would add that the Abwehr was German military intelligence in World War II. Continuing. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of servants of the Third Reich. The founder of the fraternity himself, Hassan al-Banna, served as an intermediary between those who went on to become the free officers, unquote, in particular Anwar al-Sadat, and the agents of Nazi Germany. Again quoting, the missions assigned to the Abwehr from this point forward began to go beyond simple military information, unquote, write Roger Faligot and Rémy Calfer. Quote, the agents of Admiral Canaris would try to engage men of power in the great German plan, along with clandestine nationalists, ethnic groups with separatist aspirations, whole regions ready to rise up against the two empires that really counted, the French and the British, unquote. In 1954, Yosef Nada would also be implicated in the preparation of the failed plot against Nasser before he fled to Germany and finally to Italy. What we're going to do is to take a look now at a portion of the preface to Dollars for Terror, and this discusses the research of Richard Labevière and how he was led in following this trail to not only Saudi finance, but to the Muslim Brotherhood, which he alleges is at the core of what he calls Islamism, or what I have termed in the past Islamofascism. And in turn, it should be noted that elements of the Islamofascist or Islamist community, including allegedly the Muslim Brothers, have worked very closely with Osama bin Laden, with Al-Qaeda, and with elements of U.S., Saudi, and Pakistani intelligence that saw these elements as useful tools. This is not unlike the way that elements of our power structure collaborated with the fascist powers of Europe, who then turned on the United States, and we wound up fighting those whom powerful elements had helped to assist. That's actually redundant, but that is very much what I believe is happening today. Although I'm not at all sure the war is being prosecuted in the best fashion, at the same time, I should underscore, at the risk of alienating some listeners, that I support military action. I believe this is an extension of the Second World War, and I believe that the fifth column that I believe was behind the attacks on September 11th and its allies around the world threatened the very future of humanity. And I think all listeners on all political stripes are all elements of the political spectrum should very carefully consider what I just said. Turning to the introduction to Dollars for Terror, on November 17, 1997, 62 people were assassinated in a temple in Luxor, Egypt, by an Islamist commando. Inquiring into the motives and the supporters of this massacre for the magazine Temps Présent, affiliated with Switzerland's French-speaking television station, my research invariably led me back to Saudi Arabia. Many times over, American, European, and Arab diplomats and public officials advised me to follow the trail of, quote, the dollars of terror, unquote. Indeed, by reconstructing the financial circuits of terrorism, one has a better chance of understanding the true nature of Islamist ideology. Every time, I was brought back to both the official and the secret structures of Saudi finance. Every time, I stumbled on the fraternity of the Muslim Brothers. The representatives of this cult, with Saudi Arabia's assistance, are financing influential associations in Egypt and also in Africa, in Asia, and in Europe. In the United States and in several European countries, representatives of the Muslim Brothers speak in the name of Islam and of the entire Muslim community. The confusion between Islamism and Islam is based on a triple ruse. Under cover of a spiritual quest, these agents of influence try to legitimate outright attacks on human rights, the bases of the Republic. Under cover of transcendence, they gradually undermine the separation of the political and the religious, which is one of the bases of democracy. Under cover of tolerance, they work to propagate a fascistic, if not fascist, ideology. Where does the money for this dangerous proselytism come from? The money that finances mosques and Quran schools, supports Islamist organizations, orchestrates the fight against the impious, unquote, regimes of the Arab Muslim world, and organizes the activism of certain Muslim communities of Europe? Since the Ayatollahs came to power, all our suspicions have turned toward Iran and its Shiite revolution. However, 4 years of research have established that the real threat lies elsewhere, in Saudi Arabia and other oil monarchies allied with the United States. The greatest world power is fully aware of this development. Indeed, its intelligence agencies have encouraged it. In certain parts of the world, the CIA and its Saudi and Pakistani homologues continue to support Islamism. Bear in mind, this book was written in 1999. What we're going to look at now is the Islamo-fascist nature of what Richard LaBeuvier refers to as the fraternity or the Muslim Brothers, alleged by LaBeuvier and others to be deeply involved not only with Islamic terrorism, but also with the organization of Osama bin Laden. I would note here that the Muslim Brothers have documented connections to people like the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, even though there are ideological differences which have led some members of the bin Laden organization, such as Mr. al-Zawahiri, to formally attack the Muslim Brothers, who primarily use financial and political power to achieve participation in various governments. Chapter 7 of The Dollars for Terror is about the Muslim Brotherhood, and as we dolly out in this particular picture, we're going to take a look not only at Nada Management or Al-Taqwa and Ahmed Huber later in the program, but we're going to look at a number of very important parallels between the Muslim Brotherhood and fascism in a classical sense, and we're also later on in the program going to be taking a look at what I believe is not only a parallel organization of the Muslim Brotherhood to that of the Bormann Organization, organization. But as I have indicated in the past, I believe that the Underground Reich and the September 11th attacks were basically executed by the Bormann organization and its allies. And the analysis presented here will lend strong credence, I believe, to the hypothesis that the Muslim Brothers, or the fraternity, as it is dubbed by Richard Labeyrière, and the Bormann organization are connected. Labeyrière writes, "Who are the Muslim Brothers and what do they want? Their doctrines are organized around the central tenet of the fusion of religion and politics, the essence of the Islamist ideology. The history of the fraternity makes the Brothers' concept of the Islamic State clear, a theocratic state of fascistic inspiration." Skipping down. "Today, the fraternity of the Muslim Brothers has become more or less clandestine. Seized by the demon of business, its new chief, the guide Mustafa Mashour, has chosen to increase the organization's economic and financial influence. The Muslim Brothers Bank has invested in several economic sectors, which helps it finance the propagation of Islam. Several leaders of the international organization of the Brothers sit on the bank's board of directors. Some of them were fellow travelers of the Nazis and are still trying today to resuscitate the old alliance of Islamism and the swastika. The Brothers Bank maintains relations with many Islamist organizations." And, skipping down once again, "ultimately, this new," and this was many, many years ago at the founding of this cult, "ultimately, this new pan-Islamism found that Egypt offered a very propitious climate for achieving its objectives, which were often contrary to the interests of Egypt itself. They made their way through the intermediaries of the financial institutions and the nation's media, as well as by the means of certain ulemas who were richly compensated by the Islamic banks, where they were selected to serve as advisors, or by the states who called upon their services," unquote. Muhammad Said al-Ashmawi continued, quote, "All my research always brings me back to the same point. At the beginning of this process of the perversion of Islam are the Muslim Brothers, an extreme right cult," unquote. An extreme right cult? Again quoting, "The history of the Muslim Brothers is infused and fascinated by fascistic ideology." Said, unquote. Said al-Ashmawi adds, again quoting, "Their doctrines, their total, if not totalitarian way of life, takes as a starting point the same obsession with a perfect city on earth, in conformity with the celestial city, whose organization and distribution of powers they can discern through the lens of their fantastical reading of the Quran," unquote. This fascistic affiliation would crop up in the analyses of several of our interlocutors, in particular that of the journalist Eric Groulot, who is a specialist in the Middle East and the former French ambassador to Tunisia and Turkey. Skipping down again, we're going to take a look now at some of the temporal parallels between the growth of the Muslim Brotherhood and key dates in the development of fascism. Bear in mind that as we looked at in For the Record, or in RFA 17, in 1929, fascist Italy signed the Lateran Treaty with the Vatican, which made Roman Catholicism the official state religion of Italy, and which in turn restructured Italian law in consideration of several of the key dogmatic elements of Roman Catholicism. And it was in 1929 that the Muslim Brotherhood coalesced. The Fraternity of the Muslim Brothers gathered a large following since its creation on April 11, 1929, by Hassan al-Banna, a 22-year-old teacher. Right from the start, the fraternity benefited not only from a historical memory that favored its rapid expansion, but it arose at a propitious moment during a confrontation between partisans and adversaries of the revival of Islam. This debate reached its apogee with the publication of Sheikh Ali Abdel Razak's book, Islam and the Origins of Power, which resolutely promoted the separation of the state and the religion. The work was burned in public, and book burnings were followed by proclamations that stoked the fires of tradition. Note the parallels to Nazi book burning here. Continuing. The British occupation also fed this movement. Lastly, the emergence and the rise to power of fascism, hostile to French and British colonialism, gave rise to many analogies with corporatist propaganda and the methods of mobilization of Mussolini's gangs. Denouncing philosophy and the social sciences as practices contrary to the teachings of the Quran, Hassan al-Banna founded the essentials of his message on the condemnation of the principle of separation of state and religion, and set the establishment of a theocratic state as his movement's goal. He also preached the reestablishment of the caliphate as the only framework that could be effective in uniting all the believers, and promoted the dissolution of political parties which, according to him, divide the Muslims. Reducing Western civilization to colonialism, Hassan al-Banna summarizes his movement's ideology thus, quote, "Islam is doctrine, divine worship, the fatherland, the nation, religion, spirituality, the Quran, and the sword," unquote. And we're going to note here a couple of other interesting temporal parallels with fascism. Hassan al-Banna moved to Cairo in 1933 when Hitler became chancellor. And I would note that many of the key fundamentalist programs of the Muslim Brotherhood were adopted in 1939, which, of course, is when World War II began. In 1933, Hassan al-Banna, a teacher in Ismailia, was nominated to Cairo, where the organization's headquarters were established. He took the title of Supreme Guide, unquote, and worked toward the development of a political, economic, and social program. On the basis of his interpretation of the fundamental texts of Islam, the fraternity adopted a program in 1939 whose principal political objective is to have a constitution adopted that would arise directly from the Quran. And skipping down, we're going to look here at specific and overt elements of parallel between the Muslim Brotherhood and Mussolini's corporate state that we looked at in detail in Miscellaneous Archive Show M42. Taking Italy's choices under Mussolini for inspiration, the economic program of the fraternity set three priorities: the instigation of a land reform, the prohibition of usury, and the termination of income tax, which was replaced by the religious tax, the zakat. The social policy foresaw a new law on labor founded on corporations. This economic program would more directly reveal its relationship to totalitarian ideologies a few years later with the works of Mohammad Ghazali, Islam and Economic Questions, of Syed Qutb, Social Justice in Islam, and of Al-Bahi Lotfi, Islam, Neither Communism Nor Capitalism. The populist contents of such writings corresponds to the social profile of most of the followers, who were recruited from the better-off rural populace and the urban middle class. The brothers denounced the profiteers and those who were starving the people. Mohammad Ghazali recommended, quote, "an economic regimen similar to that which existed in Nazi Germany and fascist Italy," unquote. The moral code is also an important component in this program, which is intended to create the, quote, "new Muslim man," unquote. It is founded on the strict observance of the rules of Islam, the punishment of any transgression, and on a teaching strictly in conformity to the precepts of Islam. Women's role in society is examined closely. The notion of the equality of the sexes is inherently negated by the concept of the supremacy of male social responsibilities. Justified by a literal interpretation of the Quran, the, quote, "natural," unquote, place of the woman is in the home. Repudiation and polygamy are legitimized by the same reading. I would add that the concept of the new Muslim man and the new German of Nazi Germany, and also the relegation of the place of women to an officially second-class position, are also very are actually in and of themselves identical not only to Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, but I would also note the similarity to the right-wing Christian fundamentalist program in the United States. The Christian right very, very strongly connected to the Republican Party. What we're going to take a look at in the final item of discussion in this first side of the program is the economic program of the Muslim Brotherhood or the fraternity, also its role in working on behalf of the Axis powers against the British in pre-war Palestine, and its support for the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, a key Axis operative and someone who recruited Muslim Waffen-SS divisions for Hitler and was very active right on up through the World Muslim Congress that played a primary role in the anti-Soviet Afghan War of the 1980s. Speaking of the economic program of the fraternity or the Muslim Brotherhood, in accordance with its program, the third pillar on which the brothers intended to build their influence supports the economic activities of the traditional religious fraternities found on the corporations of trades. In line with the interests of its customers, the fraternity developed a major sector for small industrial and commercial companies, in Fiche du Monde Arabe, or Files on the Arab World, Lucien Jor cites, among others, the Islamic Transactions Company, specializing in transport, the Islamic Press Society, unquote, which puts out various newspapers and publications, the Muslim Brothers Company for Spinning and Weaving, unquote, a kind of cooperative belonging to its employees, and the Engineering Trade and Labor Company, which associated several companies in the vicinity of Alexandria. By the end of the 1930s, the fraternity claimed some 500,000 members. Up until the Second World War, it strove to develop its economic sector, to refine its ideological concepts, to train its representatives, and to improve its organization and its techniques of social penetration. In 1936, during the Arab Revolt in Palestine, the fraternity made its first incursion into the political arena. The Muslim Brothers tried out their pan-Islamic slogans against British colonialism while proclaiming their support for the Mufti of Jerusalem. Skipping down. In 1942, the fraternity clandestinely established its military branch. This came to light in a spectacular way with the assassination, while the parliament was in full session on February 24, 1945, of Prime Minister Ahmad Maher. He had just declared war on the Axis powers. And we're going to continue with our analysis of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and elsewhere in the Middle East during World War II and later. Bear in mind, according to Egyptian intelligence, Youssef Nada, as a very young man, was working for the Abwehr, German military intelligence, against the British on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Axis. And bear in mind that it was, of course, Youssef Nada who founded Al-Taqwa, later Nada Management. And he denies, of course, all involvement with terrorism. If many of the concepts and some of the elements of discussion, both about September 11th and other matters, seem strange to listeners, that is understandable. Let me make some references that will help to flesh out your understanding. First of all of the programs I've done in the past are available from Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, email, mail, M-A-I-L, at SpitfireList.com. SpitfireList is one word, SpitfireList.com. You can visit the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website, where in the For the Record section, actually there are descriptions of all of the programs available from Spitfire, and in the For the Record section, there are detailed annotated descriptions of all of the For the Record programs, including, by the time listeners hear this, of For the Record 343. Sister station WFMU-FM has archived the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, DaveEmory. And I'm happy to report that as of January 13, 2002, for all intents and purposes, all of the back For the Record programs are available on another URL for download only. There are links to the download only URL on both the wfmu.org/Dave Emory site and on the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. That concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program 343, Mind Jihad, Part 2, Old Complicities That Go Back to the Late 1930s. This has been recorded on January 13th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.